Cindy and Peter, would you come up and tell us about the good work you've done?
She's ordering me, just here. She's ordering me.
Well, he invited
just you.
Dennis, you're ordering him, and he's doing it. You got to bring it
up. Good morning. Cindy Hunt, Legislative Council's Office. Mr. Chair, before you, I hope, is the A-12 amendment, which I prepared on behalf of Senator Duke. And they're identical to the A-10 amendments that you saw yesterday, with one exception, in that the A-12 amendments are creating an added penalty, basically, for disorderly conduct in a school safety zone. And the change from the A-10 is that school safety zone is defined differently in the A-12. And the difference is that a school safety zone means any public property within 1,000 feet of any real property comprising a school, instead of just any property. So
that should solve our problem. Any questions? I think we need to move the dash A-9 and then the dash A-12 amendments.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'll move the dash A-9 amendments to House Bill 2335.
Dr. Dukes has moved the dash...
You said A-9.
A-9 amendments to House Bill 2335. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the dash A-12 amendments to House Bill 2335.
Senator Duke has moved the dash A-12 amendments to House Bill 2335. Discussion? Objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2335 to the floor with the due pass recommendation as amended.
Senator Duke has moved House Bill 2335 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Clerk, call the roll.
Senator
Tarnow? Aye.
Senator Duke?
Aye.
Chair Scar?
Aye. I receive the necessary majority. House Bill 2335 is moved forward to due pass recommendation, and Senator Courtney will carry.
Okay, Senator Sanders wants to be standing. Whatever you want to do, Mr. Chair, I'll do.
All right.
You want to do.
Thank you.
Thanks,
sir. Senator Shannon brought the other. I think we'll just...
Yeah,
why don't we get to you, Senator Shannon. Senator Shannon will carry. Open the public hearing on House Bill 2174. And we have Tom Johnson and Ron Hall.
Senator Starr and members of the committee, I'm Tom Johnson, an assistant administrator in the Oregon Health Division. I have with me today Mr. Ron Hall, the section manager of the Environmental Services and Consultation Section. We're here today in support of House Bill 2174, the A engrossed version. The Health Division is responsible for carrying out licensing and inspection programs for swimming pools and spas in the interest of public health. Public pools and spas include large aquatic centers operated by cities, special districts, as well as small pools and hotels and motels. They also include hot tubs and jacuzzis and athletic clubs and spas. In 24 counties, the local health departments of the state have asked for the responsibility of carrying out the licensing and inspection responsibilities that we've delegated to them. In those counties, they set their own fees, but operate under the administrative rules and policies and the direction of the state. House Bill 2174A will change the method in which revenue is received from the county fee-supported programs to support the state activities that set the standards and provide the oversight for these programs. The Health Division strongly supports this change, and also the Conference of Local Health Officials supports this change. While the majority of the counties conduct their own inspections, as we've just indicated, 12 counties have chosen to have the Health Division sanitarians carry out these direct inspection services. Those counties include Lake, Harney, Union, Grant, Wallowa, Gilliam, Morrow, Wheeler, Wasco, Sherman, Umatilla, and Claxton. The fees that we charge for these services, for this license, is set by statute and is set at $100 and has not been raised since 1983. This bill does not affect those fees. For some time, we've known that the revenue from these license fees for swimming pools have not kept pace with inflation and the costs of running this program. At the Ways and Means Human Services Subcommittee, DHR promised to look for the funds to keep these activities going during the interim between now and the next session. And in the event that we are not able to find those fees internally, the subcommittee authorized us to come to the e-board to seek funds to carry on these activities. And we also were directed to work with constituent organizations and groups to try to come up with an agreed-upon fee proposal for next session. And we certainly intend to do that and have support from the organizations that we've talked to do that. As I indicated, the Coalition of Local Health Officials, statutory body representing local health departments, have indicated their support for this bill, the A engrossed version. And I thank you for your time and would be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Any questions? Senator Duke.
I guess I need a little clarification. All session long, I have been hearing from a particular constituent, who you've probably heard from, too, with the St. Helens Park and Recreation.
I believe we have.
Yes, and I've been hearing from the St. Helens Chamber of Commerce, and they hate this bill. But I see it no longer increases fees. Now, I noted that when you listed those that have the Health Division do the inspections, that St. Helens wasn't one of them. So... I hope I'm incorrect. Are they paying a fee to you to inspect other people's facilities while at the same time paying to inspect their own?
Senator Dukes, no. Columbia County is one of those delegate counties that we have delegated the responsibility to. They set their own fee. They carry out their inspection services. We get a certain portion of that, less than 15%, to run the statewide activities of setting the standards, of providing an oversight to them, providing training to them, other counties. But we don't get involved in that county in the direct inspection or the real licensure activities of that county. And as you point out, the provisions which that certain constituent of yours found objectionable are no longer in the bill.
So as the bill sits before us today, it will not change anything for them?
Chair Starr and Senator Dukes, that is exactly correct.
Further questions? Thank you very much. We're close. Anyone else here to testify on the bill? Not with the public hearing, open the work session on House Bill 2174.
Mr. Chair, I have some reservations about the bill, but I'll move it to the floor for the sake of getting it. I may not go along with the floor. I'll move House Bill 2174.
Thank you. Thank you. Senator Tarno has moved House Bill 2174 to the floor.
Mr. Chair, I'm in the same position. Somebody might want to count votes on the floor before we send it to us.
That's interesting.
Mr. Chair, without recommendation.
Without recommendation. All right. further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Turner?
Aye.
Senator Duke? Senator Shannon.
Aye.
Senator Duke.
Aye.
Chair Starr.
Aye. I received the necessary majority. House Bill 2174 is moved forward without recommendation. The well, I think the chair. Yeah, chair will carry. We're hoping a public hearing on House Bill 2177. We have Mike Skeels. Chairman Starr, for the record, I am Mike Steele. I'm the director of the State Public Health Laboratory within the Health Division.
And Chairman Starr, I'm Rick Gates, administrator of the Department of Environmental Quality Laboratory Division.
We've got written testimony, which is being passed around. With your permission, what I'd like to do is just hit the high points of that rather than reading the whole thing. Appreciate it. Thank you. First, some background on this bill. At present, environmental testing labs in Oregon, and by that I mean the private businesses that do testing for all kinds of environmental samples, are not licensed or accredited in any way except for those which test public drinking water supplies to monitor their safety. And those labs are certified by the Oregon Health Division. In other words, if you're operating a private environmental testing lab and you want to certify the safety of a public drinking water supply, you yourself have to be certified by the Health Division, and that's one of the things that I'm responsible for. There's a new voluntary national accreditation program with emphasis on the voluntary for environmental labs. It's called the National Environmental Laboratory Accreditation Program, or NELAP for short. It's administered by the EPA, but national standards for lab accreditation have been set by a consensus process over the last two or three years that has involved both private laboratories plus state and federal government agencies. And this process has been a coming together of people who regulate in this industry and who work in this industry, and they've reached agreement about the scientific and quality assurance standards that any laboratory that wants accreditation should have. At the present time, the Oregon Health Division, as well as DEQ, who Rick represents, and the Oregon Department of Agriculture, have been working together very well for many years for the Drinking Water Laboratory Certification Program, which I mentioned. The way this works is that the Health Division administers the program under its statutes, and then we contract with the Department of Environmental Quality and the Department of Agriculture for inspection services and expertise that they have in special areas of chemistry for these laboratories that we do not have. We do microbiology, they do chemistry. And so coming together, we've been able to have a very viable, well-received laboratory certification program. But again, it's just been in the drinking water area. But now labs can be voluntarily accredited under NELAP in several areas, such as stream and river water, sewage, solid and hazardous waste, air quality, and a number of areas that go well beyond just drinking water testing. And as you can imagine, there are many different kinds of chemical and microbial contaminants that can be detected, like pesticides and fertilizers and industrial wastes and bacteria and all sorts of things. So that's sort of the background. At present time, there is only certification for those private environmental testing labs that want to participate in the drinking water program. There isn't any other kind of accreditation available to them. So let me just tell you what this bill does, given that background. This bill allows the creation of a NELAP accrediting authority, which consists of three agencies, the Department of Environmental Quality, the Health Division, and the Department of Agriculture. This will allow a single point of entry for labs that want to apply for this voluntary accreditation without administrative duplication between the agencies. And I just want to emphasize that the agencies involved already have the statutory authority that we need to apply nationally to become the accrediting authority for Oregon. In fact, we're in the process of doing that. But what we don't have is a single administrative structure which would allow us to receive applications from laboratories and process them and so forth. if we don't unify this in some way, we're going to end up with duplication and inefficiency because they'll have to apply to DEQ for certain kinds of certification. They'll have to apply to us for other kinds of certification. And in the interim, we work together to craft a system that will make it simpler for labs and would allow us to streamline the process. So that's one of the things that the bill does. Second, the bill, as I said, provides for administrative support for the accrediting authority in this unified way. But the three agencies would be equal partners in policymaking and accreditation decisions. And all three agencies have worked together and support this arrangement as it's laid out in House Bill 2177, so that if there's a decision about accreditation of a laboratory or any other kind of action or how the program should be run, the three agencies would work together, and everybody would be equal partners in that, although the Health Division would be sort of the administrative home. And the third thing the bill does is that it allows the accrediting authority to charge fees for labs seeking DLAP accreditation, which would not exceed the cost of administering the program. And, of course, these fees would have to be approved by the Department of Administrative Services and reported to the legislature as prescribed under Senate Bill 333 from the session before. So there's a legislative oversight of this process. Those are the three elements of the bill. That's what it would do. The environmental laboratory community, as represented by the Oregon Environmental Laboratory Association, testified in support of this bill in the House. The reason is that it gives them access to a voluntary national accreditation, which they feel will be very important to their business in the future. There will be reciprocity between states so that a laboratory that has accreditation in the NELAP will be recognized as being accredited in other states where they might want to do business, where somebody puts that in as a condition of the bid. It will give them a stamp of approval from an independent third party, which they can use to show their clients that they meet the quality assurance standards and so forth. And we've been working with them for some time, and they like it. They also like the idea of only having to make one application to one accrediting authority instead of to three different agencies. There's been no testimony in opposition to this bill. Northwest Pulp and Paper registered some questions on the House side in Commerce. They asked a lot of questions about the bill. Is it really voluntary? Where would this go? They asked a number of questions. We answered those apparently to their satisfaction or to the satisfaction of the Commerce Committee. And we also presented this in a hearing and during the Health Division's budget process and Ways and Means. They received it favorably as well and have referred it to you. And I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Senator Duke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It sounds like a great program. I have a question. Has it been Ways and Means?
Yeah.
It has been, yes. I assume because it's other funds that people who apply to you will pay a fee, and that's how you're going to cover it. But don't we have to put the cart after the horse? I mean, don't you have to develop the rules before you can charge the fees?
Chairman Starr, Senator Dukes, if I understand your question right,
would you get the money to get the
Well, paper? That's a good question. We in the drinking water program, already have some staffing to provide the administrative support to publicize this new opportunity and to sort of get started with it. But once the applications begin to roll in, what we may have to do is increase staffing if the revenue is there. And in budget package number 122 in the Health Division budget, there's 1.5 FTE covered by other funds limitation, which would allow us to increase the staffing if the funds are available to do it. But you're right, it is a chicken and egg situation. But we feel that we really need to try it and see how much interest there is. We've had a lot of interest from expressed by the laboratories, but we do have to adopt the rules for a fee structure. I mean, that would be the next step. We can't just start charging fees. We've got to go through the administrative rulemaking process to do it.
The first couple of people who apply shouldn't be in any big hurry to get their certification.
Senator Dukes, we think it's going to take us at least several months to get this in place. In fact, Oregon is one of the first states that's being given NELAP, it's called recognition. The state is recognized as the accrediting authority. And actually just last week, we learned that we are going to get this recognition. So we already have the authority to do it. What we're trying to do is put the mechanism in place to make it work.
Sounds like a great idea.
Mr. Chair, Senator Duke, in order that no lab gets a running jump on another one, the national program has set we will open up an application period for 90 days, probably sometime this fall or early winter, but no one will actually receive a certification until July 2000. So that nobody gets ahead of somebody else and starts.
And that gives you time to catch up.
That's correct.
Okay.
Further question. Drinking water is mandatory. Drinking water testing is a mandatory program. When NELAP is in place, are you going to fold that into the NELAP plan and not have a parallel program?
Yes, Chairman Starr. Our plan is to recognize NELAP accreditation as equivalent to the drinking water certification that we're now doing. And the way the statute reads is that the Health Division can essentially do whatever EPA does in the Safe Drinking Water Act, but may not exceed it. The EPA has said that they will recognize NELAP accreditation for purposes of drinking water certification, so that's our plan. No lab will have to go through the same process twice.
Any further questions? If not, we're going to close the public hearing and open the work session on House Bill 2177.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2177 and goes to the floor with the detached recommendation.
Senator Duke has moved House Bill 2177 and goes to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Turno.
Aye.
Senator Shannon.
Aye.
Senator Duke.
Aye.
Chair
Starr. Aye. I receive the necessary majority. House Bill 2177 moves forward to due pass recommendation. Senator Duke, will you carry? Senator Duke will carry. Open the public hearing on House Bill 3053. Ray Helps.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ray Phelps. I'm here representing Oregonians to Maintain Community Standards, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 48. And we're here in support of House Bill 3053A and Gross. You have materials distributed, but I'm not going to read from those. I'm going to be very brief. The initiative petition process has, at the end of the gathering of signatures, a signature verification requirement. And Oregon, in 1973, adopted the law requiring or providing for statistical sampling rather than 100% verification, and has, since that time, used a formula where a predetermined number of signatures are randomly selected through a mechanism to be actually, in fact, verified by county clerks. Later, in the 80s, the law was changed to say there would be two samples. The first sample would be 1,000, and the second sample, if there was not sufficiency after 1,000 verification of signatures, an additional 4,000 would be taken and, in fact, physically verified with the county registration records. I think Senator Joan Biggs is really familiar with this kind of process.
I verified a few.
She and I met over petition. Okay. Nevertheless, and the statistical process, as far as I'm concerned, has worked and worked very well. A part of it, though, is not working, and that's the part where you get all the way through the calculation and then to accommodate a concern or a reality that maybe somebody signed it more than one time, a straight across reduction of 2% of the total number of signatures submitted by the petitioner is taken and reduced from the total, and then do we have a constitutional number or not? What is occurring because of the way the petition is now being circulated is more duplications than the 2% accommodates. And so we have been working with the Secretary of State's office, and they have assisted us greatly in coming up with the provisions in House Bill 3053A to do several things. Number one, the county clerks would mark their records every time they verify a specific signature, so that if there is a second signature in there, it'll be found. And some county clerks do that and some don't. But nevertheless, it's not going to be a straight across requirement. The second thing is with respect to the two samples,
the first sample of 1,000 signatures, when the formula is run, will be a reduction of 8%. That's based on examination of materials that the Secretary of State has and we have, and we kind of say, yeah, 8% works. It's also reflected in the work that the Secretary of State is currently doing. Now, that being a higher percentage, all that assures is that we've raised the standard with respect to duplicate signatures, not that we've rejected the petition. Because if you don't make the first cut, in other words, you don't have enough signatures, then a second sample is taken, and that second sample of signatures will be something at least 5% of the total number of signatures. So that's more signatures. And that will be verified, those signatures will be verified by the county clerks, and the duplicates will be identified, and all of that will be sent back to the Secretary of State, who will run the formula again. But at this point, based on the actual verification process, the duplication factor for that specific petition will be determined. So it could be 3%, 5%, 4%, 8%. That will be based upon the examination done by the county clerks and through a formula developed by the Secretary of State's office. That will virtually assure that, nothing's perfect, but it will virtually assure that you will not have petitions resulting in ballot measures that really did not have the right number of signatures or the required number of signatures. What we're finding is, as because things have changed and you have different kinds of processes for gathering signatures, paid circulators, petitions being on the street a long time, people are inadvertently signing it more than one time, or people are deliberately signing it more than one time. And you have attached to the material I've given you examples of where persons have signed 3, 4, 5. One person fell in love with a petition and signed 16 times. So it looks kind of tough and blast the hardest. But anyway, the person did. And the 2% just won't catch that. This process will. And it's a process that the Secretary of State has signed off on, and we like it too. And we think it will improve the system significantly and make people feel like, oh, okay, I don't like it, but at least there were the right number of signatures. The other thing we're requesting is a repeal, and you have with you the -84 amendment, not the repeal, the removal from the bill of Section 2. That's the requirement presently on the books that political or treasurers of political action committees will aggregate contributions. And as you all very well know, that's when someone gives you more than one contribution. What's required is if you say you have 5 contributions from me at $100 each, as you report the second, third, fourth, you aggregate it forward. So if the last time you report my contribution of $100, you also say the aggregate of $500. We think that ought to stay in the law. And as a result of that, we'd like that to be taken out of this bill. With that, that concludes my remarks, and I'll be very happy to answer any questions.
Senator Duke.
Can you wait for me? I'm getting a bad rap here. Jay, I've been concerned about statistical sampling for a long time. I mean, I remember the local petitions we had to verify all of them, so I just got used to doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Can't really do that on a statewide basis very effectively. But did I understand that if a petition under this fails the first time, the clerks will get to then go in and verify more of the signatures?
Yes.
Clerks okay with this?
Yes.
I mean, given all of the petitions that are out there, that's a workload increase for them.
Well, it is, but it's not a material increase because we're not talking about all of the petitions. You can see with some of the materials that in the color graph, all of the petitions won't result in a second verification. I think the county clerks, and they've not changed since I first met them, and they're quite a personality, but one of the things the county clerks are is they are people who are determined that it be done right. And God love them, they're the ones that actually make the integrity of the system. We only deserve it, they make it. And I don't believe there's any county clerk in the state would feel comfortable in saying, well, gee, we'll have a little more work, but and if it gets on the ballot, it's a bad idea. You know, it's okay. They're just not those kinds of persons, and you know them as well as I.
Anyone else want to testify? If not, we're going to close the public hearing and open the work sessions on House Bill 3056.
Thank you very much,
Senator. Thank you.
Chair, I'll move the -84 amendments to House Bill 3056.
Senator Duke,
has moved the -84 amendments to House Bill 3053.
Yes. I don't mean to slow down things, but he mentioned the one thing he wanted to say. So he isn't moving in these minutes to take it out. What about that?
Senator Shannon?
Yes.
The -84 take out Section 2, which is the aggregation issue, which is what Mr. Phelps testified that they would like to have taken out of the bill, so that the aggregation requirements stay in law.
I know, but why would somebody want them out? I never heard the argument of why in the bill it's taken out.
Obviously, whoever did it in the House didn't care enough to go over the Senate.
Right.
Why would, can you give us the other side's answer? I just wonder.
Mr. Chair, Ray Phelps again. Senator Shannon, the reason it was in there, and there were a number of other deletions, name and address and a number of other things, was it was a, I think it was a good idea at its time when people were sitting around saying, you know, how can we make this work better for the treasurers and political action committees? And so when we were doing it, we thought, okay, well, as the public discussion evolved, it was a good idea whose time has not come. And what it really comes down to is it's a good idea to aggregate so that when a person looks at it, they don't have to go through and add them up. So it's more work for the political treasurer. Oh, okay, that's the way it has to be.
Well, since he's the one, or she is the only one that can be fined big time in a campaign,
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry that they weren't here to explain that because I do have two on the treasurer.
I do too. I've been one, and it's a lot of work. And on balance, I'd rather not do it. But when you look at the other side of the issue, and that's public disclosure and the facility that a person would need to go through these reports, particularly an uninitiated person, he really ought to aggregate. And so it was not as good an idea as the first thought.
When the Secretary of State was going to make available to us a computer program,
mm-hmm.
that was where the glitch was in the aggregate. I wonder if that would make that program, it wouldn't, she said, okay, because there's some kind of some problem why they couldn't give us I spent a lot of money trying to develop it, and that was the only glitch I could go for.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Any objections to the A4? Not so ordered.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I'll move House Bill 3053 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Dukes has moved House Bill 3053 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator
Sarno. Aye.
Senator Shannon.
Aye.
Aye.
Chair
Starr. Aye. I received the necessary majority. House Bill 3053, as amended, has moved to the floor to do pass recommendation. Senator Duke. Okay. And open a public hearing on HCR 12. Call Vi McDonald, Representative Winters, and JL.
Good morning, Senator Starr and members of the committee. I want to thank you for hearing House Concurrent Resolution 12. A number of you also signed on this resolution. It's in memorial for Emil Elvire, who his wife, as some of you know, is also a staff to the speaker. But Emil's life was one of dedication of service to not only the state, but to this country. And on June 12th, in service to the state, he was in training flying over the Wallawas and had a plane crash into this. Some of you saw that on the news. And his life and his service to us in this state is one of an individual who has dedicated all of himself. And I think, you know, when we talk about service above self, we're talking about Emil Beer. He graduated from Western Oregon University. He taught in our same school. And he was in the U.S. Marine Corps. And he was a veteran of the Korean War and the Vietnam War. I knew him and his wife as president of Capital City Republican Women. But those of us who also know him outside of politics know that he's not above transporting any of us across the state to places where we need to go. I was reminded of one day here in the Capitol, he came to my desk and he said, "You need to belong to the Civil Air Patrol," because he really believed that all of us needed to be in the service in this state. I think we were very blessed to have him among us as a friend and as a servant in the state. And I would just like to recognize all that he has done and to say thank you to his family from us. And I think we probably have every senator who was available in the building the day that we went around to get the sign on. And I don't think that there's very few that are missing. I would just like to have a unanimous vote from everyone as we pass the resolution. And I thank you for doing it.
Thank you.
Chair Starr, members of the committee. My name is Brian McDonald, and I'm from Salem. I'm here to testify in support of House Confluent Resolution 12. This memorial honors retired Colonel Emil Beer, United States Marine Corps. Colonel Beer was a friend, and he was the husband of Pat, who works in the Speaker's office. Emil and my husband became very close, as they were both retired Marine colonels. They both served in Vietnam. They both served in Korea, and they both helped children and other people. Well, as I said, Emil served our nation in Korea and Vietnam. He was also a retired teacher, and he touched the lives of many students. As vice commander in the Oregon wing of the Civil Air Patrol, he rescued and helped save the lives of many Oregonians. In addition, he trained others for search and rescue missions. Colonel Beer was a good person and contributed greatly to our state and nation. I urge support of this bill. Thank you.
Senator Starr and members of the committee on jail, also representing Speaker Snodgrass and speaking to HGR 12. If you ask anybody in our office, the toughest day that they've worked here in the legislature was the day that we found out that our worst suspicions were confirmed and that we had lost a good friend in Emil Beer and a good role model. Perhaps you knew him as somebody who gave selflessly and happily of his time to the members of this body. I knew for one that he flew the speaker to all the furthest outreaches of the state and where she needed to go, and I knew he did that for several others. If you had the pleasure, like I did, of watching the House honor him with HCR 12 on June 30th, I have never seen anything like it. So many people stand up and pay tribute to this man who was a good husband and a father, a good man of faith, a war hero in the Korean and Vietnam Wars, somebody who gave up his time in the Civil Air Patrol. He was paid honor as a school teacher, and he refereed ball games with Representative Backlund. And so many people gave good tributes, and we feel that this is a fitting tribute to his life, and we would appreciate your endorsement.
Thank you very much. Anyone else want to testify? Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Ed Hughes for Oregon's veterans. The entire veterans community supports this bill, of course.
Thank you very much for bringing this to us. There's no further testimony. We'll close the public hearing and open a work session on HCR 12.
Chair, I move HCR 12 to the floor with it be passed.
Senator Shannon has moved HCR 12 to the floor with it be passed recommendation. Any discussion?
I would just like to add a little bit, because he is our friend too, and I'm happy to do this. I remember Mark Simmons, I saw him shortly after, Representative Simmons, and he said that Emo had just flown him over to his daughter's graduation because they wouldn't miss session. And he too, I saw him in a restaurant one Sunday with my parents and came over to our table and said, you need to belong to the Civil Rights Patrol, Maryland. He was a real recruiter. And his wife has volunteered hours and hours in the recruiter's office. What, is he taking us away?
Yes.
I got it. Okay, let's go real quick. That's
Kirk Colerole.
I know you do. Shut up.
Senator Shannon?
Aye.
Senator
Duke?
Aye.
And Chair Starr? Aye. I receive the necessary majority. HCR 12 passed the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation, and Senator Durfer will carry. Being no further business, the Senate Committee on Public Affairs is adjourned.